Today, it's half a Monday evening property rant. Well, again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, notice posts covering finance and property news. Well, unfortunately, Edwin is still unwell. Hopefully, I'll get him on Wednesday. His voice is a little better now, so looking forward to that. But nevertheless, there's quite a lot of information that I want to share tonight, and so I've decided to take you through some of those key themes and variations. After all, there is so much going on. Now, to start, let me just highlight the fact that I made a show over the weekend talking about markets being caught between the trade war downdraft and AI hype. And the question is, what's ahead? And that's a very good segue into tomorrow night's show, which is my weekly live show. And tomorrow, Damien Klassen is coming on, and we're going to talk in specifics about are markets at a wobbly top, or is there more to go? This is a very important question, of course, at the moment, because nobody quite knows perhaps what's going on, but there are some very important indicators, and so we can explore that tomorrow. So mark your diaries and join us live at 8 p.m. Sydney, and of course, you can always ask a question in the chat and we'll get to it during the show. Yesterday, I also made a show with Joe Wilkes, and we did a bit of a deep dive into some of the underlying questions, and specifically asked the question, was Mad Max a documentary or should we just be scared? This is a series of shows that I'm running with Joe at the moment on some of the questions, some would call them conspiracy theories, which are underpinning what's happening at the moment. And there are some very important points. So check it out if you've not seen it. And of course, I have started to run my anti-spruik conversations again. There's a reason for that. And it's simply this, that you cannot necessarily take the top line data on prices and try and read it across. And so I have now done anti-spruiks for Far North Queensland, where prices are a lot higher than they were, but not uniformly so. I also covered Melbourne, where prices have fallen and are not really recovering that much, despite the hype. And of course, in Tasmania, prices are languishing significantly, which is very important because at a granular level, that's where you really see what is going on. But of course, all of the newspapers around the place just pick up the top level stories. And of course, this is now what's happened with information to the end of July. And according to this article here, and according to Catality, home values are gaining pace and are hitting record highs in most capital cities as a shortage of properties for sale and previous cuts to official interest rates are adding to the nation's housing affordability crisis. And so they go through the Catality data. In Sydney, the median house values climbed through the $1.5 million mark, increasing by 0.8% last month to be 3.3% up since the start of the year. Melbourne's median house price lifted by 0.4% to $952,000. Although it's up 2.8% so far this year, values in Melbourne are still short of the peak hit during the COVID pandemic. And house values in Brisbane at just over $1 million and Adelaide at $895,000 lifted by 0.7% last month, while they increased by 0.9% in Perth, median there at $869,000, and by 0.6% in Canberra at $984,000. Now, it's quite important to understand that this doesn't tell the full story, of course. Nevertheless, because of the lack of new property, demand is still strong and migration is very strong. Now, if we look at Catality in a bit more detail, you can see here that the change in dwelling values is variable across the states and the combined capitals and combined regionals moved up the same amount over the last month. And Perth showed the highest movement other than Darwin, but Darwin is such a small market that really you can't take that at much more than face value. And here is the Catality 3-month rolling changes with Perth up 2.6%, Brisbane up 2.3%, Adelaide at 1.5%, Sydney at 1.8%, Melbourne at 1.2%, and Hobart up 0.1%. And here is the more detailed analysis that you can compare the past month, the past 3 months, and the past 12 months. And well, however you look at this, you can certainly say that prices are bubbling on the upside, but not uniformly. And there is still considerable differences between units and houses, and even in different localities in the same area. So, as with all of this information, handle with care. The other thing they also covered was the rental story, and fascinating to see that the rental story still is that rents are rising the most in Darwin for houses at 6.2%, or 9.2% for units, followed by Perth at 4.7% and 7.4%. Interestingly, houses in Hobart were up 5.4% annualized for rents, whilst in Sydney, in Melbourne and Canberra, the rises were smaller. Now, perhaps no surprise then that given all of this data and the latest in the way of auction data as well, the journalists went to town. The Domain data showed that the clearance rates last week in Melbourne was at 71.1%, compared with last week at 71.8%, and in Sydney, 73.4% compared with 71.1%. And remember that those clearance rates are the comparison of the number reported compared to the number sold, not the number listed. So as always, of course, this information is only partial and not really that helpful. But nevertheless, of course, the journalists go to town. And as this article highlights, Melbourne's auction clearance rate is surging alongside prices, with major milestones achieved on both fronts in the past week, they wrote in this article. And they quote, PropTrack data showed 73% of homes went under the hammer and are selling. And that's a whopping 15 percentage points up from November 2024. And they're also talking about price boosts. But again, I have to say that this is partial and incomplete and is misleading. There are areas in Melbourne where prices are still falling. And check out the anti-spruik video that I made earlier with regards to this, because, well, it is very important to be granular, as I always say. Articles, of course, continue. Sydney's sale A-day suburbs, growing locations where frequent transactions keeping a lid on prices, which is quite interesting. And they highlight Blacktown and Marsden Park and Castle Hill, where perhaps the median price is a little bit capped. And Blacktown in particular is an area where the prices are still on the lower side. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to Edwin about this later in the week. But there's another article here from Melbourne showing that there's been a considerable exodus as unit owners flee the city. And this is because, of course, investors have been selling and selling and selling there. And that's worth noting, particularly because demand is still strong, but rental stress is very high in the centre of Melbourne, as my data shows. And this is translating to a lot of property investors underwater. Another article, which was quite interesting, was the highlight that the pain and gain report from Cotality, formerly CoreLogic, showed that 7.7% of all Sydney home sales were at a loss in the March quarter. Sellers in the hills made a median profit of $739,000. That's the highest average among Sydney regions. It's fascinating that they focus on the property price rises, but of course, it's not the full story, and there are still some people selling at a loss. We'll continue to see this, and interestingly, quite a few property investors in the centre of Melbourne, CBD, and also in some areas of Sydney, are selling at a considerable loss, and that is simply because the rental equation can't work anymore. The rent that they can actually demand doesn't cover the cost of the investment property plus the strata fees, which of course continue to rise dramatically. Now, in terms of other data, the dwelling approvals from the ABS last week show that the total number of dwellings approved rose 11.9% in June to 17,076. That's according to the seasonally adjusted data. And they make the point that the movement was driven by a strong rise in private dwellings, excluding houses, which rose 33.1%, but approvals for private sector houses fell 2.2%. And let me remind you again, the problem with these statistics is that when you get a block approved, multiple dwellings, that moves the dial significantly. And that's why the unit approvals move up and down so much. These are not very reliable statistics. And just to underscore that, if you look at the data covered in this earlier report that I mentioned, approvals for units lifted by a third in June and are now 87.1% higher than a year ago. Over the year, a total of 185,844 homes were approved across the country. That's a 13.5% lift on those over 23 to 24. Despite the lift, though, approvals are still 55,000 short of the 240,000 needed every year to reach the federal government's target of 1.2 million homes by the middle of 2029. So that's very important context to understand that things are not necessarily what they first seem to be, simply because the approvals move around because of the blocks that are coming in. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we are close to meeting our targets. And in fact, when you look at the data in more detail, the targets are still a ways away and are very unlikely to be achieved. No surprise, perhaps, because of the story there. Now, the other interesting observation when you look at the most recent data is that credit is still booming for houses. And the latest credit data from the RBA show that housing credit, which was 63% of total private credit, posted a 0.5% rise, as it's done every month since September 2024. This monthly pace was actually slightly higher than this time last year, and that resulted in annual credit growth for housing up 5.9% over the year. Now, that's the highest so far in this credit cycle. And of course, 5.9% is way higher than wages growth or inflation, which highlights again that more people are getting more geared up. They make the point also it was the owner-occupier growing at 0.5% or 5.8% year over year, but investor credit was up 0.6%, growing at 6.3% year on year. And that suggests that investors are still piling back in. How households can continue to leverage up in the current environment is to some a bit of a mystery, but the truth is, of course, that some households have little debt and quite big income still, and they are the ones very much piling in, particularly to the investment sector, but other households are really struggling. This credit growth is very strong and, of course, supports the bank, but doesn't necessarily support the broader economy, but is also one reason why house prices are continuing to rise, particularly in some areas. Also make the point that we get the quarter two lending indicators on August the 13th. That's going to show the flow of housing finance approvals. The ABS, of course, junked their monthly reporting quite recently and only do this four times a year now. That's a major mistake in my mind. And the expectation is that we're going to see steady and gradual growth in outstanding housing credit. That's no surprise, but it's not necessarily good. Now, of course, we've always got the question of supply versus demand. And as we've said on many occasions, high migration is a very significant factor. We've had a significant rise in the number of people coming in the country again, and that is creating significant pressure. So I was a bit surprised to discover then the government has now announced that there's going to be a national planning level of 295,000 international student places for 2026, they say, providing stability and certainty for the international education sector. That's actually 25,000 additional places compared to 2025. And as Scott Phillips said, they've got to be kidding, surely. If we can provide additional housing, There are more than enough people here already or plan to arrive who can use that accommodation. Increasing student numbers is nuts. Yep, I agree with that. But I also am not surprised to see this because, of course, the only lever the Albanese government's got is to pump that economy, grow it and grow it and grow it, more Australians, and that means that more people can buy property, and that's the only lever in town. Unfortunately, it doesn't lead to a good set of outcomes. So I was interested to see this article that suggests that the coalition is going to attack Labour on housing. It's not as if they did a great job when they were in power. The coalition will launch its first legislative attack on the federal government over housing, seeking to reverse a tax incentive the building industry believes will deliver 80,000 new rental properties. So they are in the middle of battles here. But the question is, are these the right battles to be fought? Where is the discussion about migration? Surely, if the coalition wanted to attack Labour, they should be attacking them on the high migration levels. Another really interesting little snippet, which I thought was quite fascinating, was that the MIMS government in New South Wales is looking into strata agents because the problem they've got at the moment is that under the current system, strata agents can receive a commission for arranging or renewing an insurance policy for one of the state's 87,000 strata schemes. The trouble is that there is a view potentially of misconduct, conflict of interest, and lack of transparency. And the strata industry, of course, has come under the spotlight again. We've got more than 1.2 million people living in strata schemes in New South Wales. And so the regulatory environment is very important. It needs to stop strata managing agents from being incentivized to act in their own interests rather than the best interests of strata owners. So they're going to look at how to perhaps ban commissions for strata managing agents and how that could affect the housing market. Agents are being paid commissions sometimes of between 15 to 20% when they land a deal, with payments climbing into the thousands. But this, of course, is one of the reasons why it is that strata fees are rising so high. And it's one of the main topics of conversation that I have in my one-to-one conversations with people struggling with investment property. Quite often, the mortgage payments are pretty painful, but it's the unexpected rise in strata fees which is the terminal part of the conversation. They simply can't make property work as an investment proposition anymore. And it's interesting, of course, that the ACTU's Secretary Sally McManus has called for a one property limit on negative gearing tax breaks, and they're going to table that for the upcoming Government Productivity Roundtable next month. Under the ACTU's proposal, the current arrangements would remain in place for 5 years, and after that date, the tax breaks will be limited to one investment property. Well, I've said for some time that the current tax arrangements are actually not helpful in terms of tackling housing affordability, and it's interesting to see this coming back on. I must also say that this productivity roundtable seems to have expanded to become more a tax debate rather than a productivity debate. Well, I'm not sure whether that's what the government intended, but the bottom line is, of course, that it's probably not going to come out with much anyway. It's likely to be another talk fest. But I do think there is a very important point here, that the generous tax breaks are actually distorting and warping the markets. But the other warp, the other distortion, is all the incentives for first-time buyers, which, of course, the Albanese government is powering into as well. So it'll be interesting to see whether that gets raised. Story is, of course, that property is way too unaffordable, as I've shown on many occasions, and it's because of 20 to 30 years of bad policy from both sides of government. And finally, let me just update you with the latest stress data, which I've just finished for July. And the story is that rental stress has risen slightly from last month. It's now at 74.8%. So this issue of rentals being more cheap is not really the full story. Financial pressure remains, of course. The stress for mortgage holders is easing just a little bit. It's just dropped below the 50% mark. It's 49.4% of households, but it's still very high and still a lot higher than it was in February 2020, when it was 32.9%. And the latest from the RBA on the debt to income ratio shows that it's drifted down to 181. That means that it's not quite twice the income to debt ratio, but it's not far. But of course, that includes all households, whether they have a mortgage or not. And bearing in mind that one third have a mortgage, you need to probably triple it. So we're close to six times on average, and we are seeing quite a few households who are still getting mortgages at 7, 8, and 9 times annual income. And let me say again, annual income is now two incomes, pretty much always, rather than one income. Whereas if you go back 230 years, it used to be one income only. So massive changes. No wonder housing affordability is still shot. In fact, I will be running through a detailed analysis of my latest reports on mortgage stress and household financial pressures, rental stress and investor stress Tuesday week. So join me for that. There's a very important conversation to be had about what's happening. And this data, of course, really helps to underscore the true impact of the many years of bad decisions. So that'll do, I think, for the moment. Bottom line is this: credit growth is still booming, house prices are continuing to rise, and the government is looking to bring in more people. Nothing to see here then. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.